The following special feature of WKQK Radio 1300 is pre-recorded.
This is a rebroadcast of the Brevard at Large program from November 21st, 2021, featuring Beth Green, Artistic Director, and Tony Spadafora, Vice President of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers.
It's time once again for Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large, where we meet various guests and discuss issues and items of interest to all of us here on the Space Coast. My name is Francis DeMuro, and I'm the host of this morning's program.
And my name is Christopher DeMuro, and I'm the co-host and producer of today's program.
And today we are very pleased to have with us as our guests Beth Green, the Artistic Director of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, and Tony Spadafora, the Vice President of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, you guys. Thank you for having us.
And thank you for being our guest. We've previously in the past, we've had at least Mr. Spadafora. Ms. Green, have you been on the program in the past?
2 years ago, we spoke before our Christmas concert.
I thought so, but my memory's not as good as it used to be.
It's been a while for everything, hasn't it?
It has been a while. The last year and a half seems like it seems like a lifetime ago.
It does. In many ways, it was.
Time's sort of gotten out of whack with the pandemic. In any event, why don't we start with you, Ms. Green? Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Where are you originally from, and how you got involved in music and that sort of thing?
Sure. So I was born up north in Massachusetts. My dad was in college housing work, and so he kind of moved around to different sized universities. And the place that music really started to stick with me was when I started taking piano lessons in Jacksonville, Florida, and I got involved in my church music program and got to do Sound of Music. I was Marta, the seven-year-old, in our church production of that, and so that really kind of started me on my path, children's choirs at church, and moved to Tampa, Florida, and did the same. Started getting involved in community choirs, eventually school choir as well, and decided to major in music at the University of Florida. I graduated from there in 2004, and so I've been teaching and conducting in a lot of areas and many, many age groups. I've been with 1-year-olds to 91-year-olds, honestly. I actually have a 91-year-old in my church choir at the moment. So.
Wow.
Really?
Is that a male or a female?
Male.
That's unusual.
It is.
He still has a wonderful voice?
Well, I don't hear him by himself, so I couldn't tell you, but we do work as a team and as a group, and so you kind of hear the group as a whole.
I see. When did you first start taking piano lessons? How old were you?
I think I was about 7.
And was that something that you
it's
were
drawn? Not my instrument, but it did start me on the path of reading music and getting an idea of how it works and how it looks.
So you don't consider yourself a good piano player?
No, I don't. But I can teach myself each part that needs to be played, and I can work with individual voice parts. But I'm not the one that can sit at the piano and play all 4. I definitely love and revere my accompanists that helped me through those pieces, so I can focus on working with the singers and their instrument.
Well, what brought you to Brevard County?
My husband. I met him in college, and I had moved to Leesburg, Florida to teach at a private K-12 school, and so I was going to teach all grade levels, ended up mostly teaching K-8. For 2 years, and then decided that was still a little too far from Melbourne to travel on weekends to see each other. And so we decided to come to the same county. He was here for an engineering internship that turned into a position.
So is your husband also musically inclined?
He is. So a lot of engineers actually sing in my choirs. He is an industrial engineer by degree, but he does more computer and software engineering in practicality for this area, which makes more sense, defense contracting. But he's a wonderful bass, and I do work with a lot of scientific minds. They really do cross over very well to the music area.
Is your position as artistic director of the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers, is that a full-time position or do you do something else?
No, I would say I probably spend 10 hours a week on it. And then I'm also a church choir director at First United Methodist Church in Melbourne on 192. So I direct the choir there and the 11:15 music service.
And so you, at the moment, you are not teaching music?
Correct. I taught until I had my son in 2015. And then I decided full-time choir, full-time music. I was an elementary music teacher for 11 years. And I decided that was a bit too intense for working on raising him. And so I decided that I wanted to be part-time while my husband works full-time.
When you were teaching music in the elementary school level, was that here in Brevard County?
Yes, I taught at Audubon Elementary School. I was music demonstration school. We were one when I arrived, and then I did our reapplication with visit and binder and all of that process to become one again. And I was chosen teacher of the year there for one of my years teaching there, and had a wonderful experience up in Merritt Island. It was beautiful children and worked with kindergarten through sixth grade. I had two levels of strings, so violin, viola, cello, and bass. The beginners all started with violin, and then when they were in sixth grade, they got to choose to move to a larger instrument if they wanted. And then I taught chorus after school, and then nine classes a day at times, so it was a lot.
It sounds
like
a lot.
That's why I thought that wasn't a good idea with a little one.
Mr. Spadafore, let's talk to you for a few moments. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're originally from, how you became interested in music. I assume you're interested in music, even though you're the vice president of the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers. I know from our past interviews with you that you, in fact, are a singing member of the group. So I know that you're interested in music. But why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that, where you're from, how you got interested in music, how you got here to Brevard County. I also know that you are not originally from Brevard County. So.
Yes, that's correct. I am from the from Northeast, from the Philadelphia area, but I only lived there about 21 years of my life, and moved away. Consider myself a corporate brat. A little bit different from Beth's background, of course. Right. My training is in. Is in engineering. I am an electrical engineer by trade and by training. And also I hold an MBA, which I received subsequent to my engineering degree. Many years ago, I heard a choir singing, of course, and the music affected me. I as I look back on it, really deep into my soul. And I said, I've got to get into a choir like this because this is just such a wonderful way for people to, be helping other people to express, the emotions that are part of music and in particular of choral music. And so I took voice lessons and this is all in addition to my day job, which was leading armies of software people for a while. And I got into a choir. We started singing, and it was just a really wonderful experience. I never forgot that. And, that blossomed into doing Broadway shows and all, again, with a full-time job. And it became a passion for me to sing. Since that time, I was a church choir director for about 6 years down the Boca area, which is where I'm originally from, because we lived there the longest of any place that we moved to. up here, then I directed a little choir until the pandemic hit. Basically, what that little choir did was we went out and we sung at different assisted living facilities, memory care facilities, that sort of thing. And that was another really wonderful experience. You know, that was really my insight into how deeply music can affect people, particularly in senile dementia facilities, where people just, I couldn't believe their reaction to music. Some of them couldn't even speak. However, you could tell that they were emotionally involved in this music. And, you know, that I think was probably the thing that really kept it for me in terms of, you know, music and singing and how that really can affect the soul of people and you know, yourself as well. So I got here to Brevard from Boca Raton, where was my last transfer to Boca. And we got here, and it was a job change for a smaller company. And while here, you know, pretty much worked in several of my own businesses. And in fact, I still have a little part-time business I run. And it's been a really great experience here. You know, Brevard's really nice. It you know, turns out to be something my wife and I both really, really enjoy being here. So, and of course, the Indie Atlantic Chamber of Singers is the best. It is just a wonderful group of very caring people, actually. You know, it's more than a singing group. You know, I kind of sometimes look at it more as a family of people who are, you know, all have the same interest and the same goal, and that is to make beautiful music, you know, here in Brevard County. And, you know, the Indie Atlantic Chamber of Singers meets all those requirements, so...
Okay, well, let me pause for a moment now and remind our listeners that they're listening to Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large.
My name is Francis DeMuro, and I'm the host of this morning's program.
And my name is Christopher DeMuro, and I'm the co-host and producer of today's program.
I'm curious in something you said, that first chorus that really sort of stirred your interest or your emotions and spurred you into getting into the music, the area of music. Where was that? Where did you hear that performance?
Well, I was actually up in the Philadelphia area. That was when I was really knee high to a toadstool.
So how old were you at that time?
Oh, about 13 years old.
Okay, so your love of music goes way back then.
Way back, yeah. In fact, I did take some instrumental lessons, which never a piano, but I never really was able to expand that because I just had too much involvement in the different aspects of my job, and you know, we moved around a lot, and so you know, wasn't until really when I, you know, was able to retire a little bit that I really got, you know, active in terms of singing and all.
How about your wife? Is she musically inclined as well?
Funny you should ask. You know, complete opposite. No, not. She loves to listen to it, and that's where it ends. But I can tell you, this, she can be very critical of what she hears. So, you know, but she doesn't sing at all. Doesn't play any instruments, right?
But she has exactly. A good ear for music.
I'm sorry?
But she has a good ear for music. You said she can be very critical.
Oh, my. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I really, a lot of times, trust her opinion as to what she's hearing because, you know, as I said, you know, she doesn't say, oh, Tony, you sang so well because she's my wife, you know. You know, a couple times she said, man, you messed that part up.
Well, it's probably good to have a critic like that. I mean,
it is, absolutely. You know, you need someone that's not going to just tell you all the time how great you are, right? That, you don't
right.
improve that way. And by the way, that's what we like about Beth, okay? I'm glad we brought that up because, you know, when we do something wrong, Beth will stop us and tell us, well, you know, we're going to have to fix that. It's not quite the way it should be. And that really, again, helps us grow, you know, especially now since, Francis, we haven't sung, in a concert for 2 years. 2019 was our last Christmas concert, prior to the pandemic, that is. And, you know, some of us are a bit rusty. I've been singing all along at church, I haven't belonged to the choir, and I'm also a cantor at our church, which means I lead the people in song. And, you know, that helped, but, you know, getting back into choral singing, you know, choral singing is really quite, in a certain sense, difficult because you have so many things you have to keep track of. You have to keep track of the score, where you are in the score, how loud or soft you're singing. Can you hear the guy next to you? Are you singing on pitch? You know, there's a lot of activity that really makes choral singing sound super. And, that you just don't get, you know, just singing solo, okay? In fact, singing solo, you tend to get sloppy a little bit, so.
Well, that's interesting. How long have you been involved with the Atlantic Chamber Singers?
Oh, goodness. I tell you, it has to have been since 2006. That'd be about 15, 16 years.
And you joined as a singer, correct? You were not
as a singer.
You were not an officer when you first joined the organization.
Oh, no. I joined as a singer, and I've been singing ever since. In fact, by the way, Francis, it is a requirement. If you want to be an officer, you also have to be a singer.
Oh, well, that's interesting. How about you, Miss Green? How long have you been involved with the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers?
So when I stopped teaching in 2015 to have my son, I actually joined the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers in August of that year. And so 2015 is when I started, and I would bring Matthew with me. He'd be on, carried around or strolled in the hallway by my parents. And so he was right in it from the very beginning. So when our current director would have to be out, he'd have me warm up the choir or get things started. And so I was sort of an assistant to him from pretty close to the start. And then in 2017, he had stepped down. And so I ended up doing kind of an audition season in the fall of 2017 and then was voted on by the choir to continue in that post. So I've been, official director, would you say, Tony, official artistic director since January, I guess, of 2018, but technically I started in August, right?
Yes, you did. Yeah. In fact, when did we first talk? It was like on a Memorial Day weekend.
It was beginning of the summer, for sure, that we talked about this. So
best choice we ever made.
Thank you.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. So Miss Green, you also are a singer, and so you joined the organization as a singer, correct?
Yes, I joined as a singer to start, absolutely. And that's definitely the way to get inside an organization and to know the ins and outs, to really feel that family atmosphere that Tony described, getting to know people in your section, just singing, breathing with them, your heartbeats begin to align. And it's just a really beautiful process to work together towards something so beautiful. And I just have to say what a valuable asset Tony is to the group, because from the very beginning, I mean, he's making announcements and sharing information with the group and with that MBA, just working on all those details. And since I've taken over, I mean, I can't tell you the endless emails that I send him of, what about this? Can you create this? And he'll work on graphics for the program. He'll type things for me. He'll print things for me because my printer never, ever, ever works.
And I don't think
he's always
just
there to be my right-hand man. So I so appreciate his work.
Thank you so much, Beth. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolute truth.
Well, just as an aside, I don't know if you all heard, but our co-host and producer was bemoaning printers. I think he is not a fan of printers.
Yes, he understands.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers. For our listeners who may not be familiar with the organization, it's obviously a choral music group, but which of you, Mr. Spadafore or Ms. Green, I'd like to, does either one of you, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the history of the organization, when it was started, and why it came to be?
Well, I can probably start with the history a little bit, Francis. The group was started in 1999 by a gentleman called David Vojeding. And David started the group when he moved here to Brevard County to be choir director at, and director of music at, Eastminster Presbyterian Church down in the Atlantic. And he felt that it might be interesting to have a group that did this sort of music, and he started the group. I wasn't around at the time. I don't remember exactly or wouldn't know how many people, but I went to several of their concerts, which, by the way, was another inspiring event. And, you know, having been to those, I said, boy, you know, I got to be able to sing with that. But I was so busy with career matters, I couldn't join until I retired, and that's how 2006 came along. Anyhow, the group's been expanding since. David is now our director emeritus, and he still sings and plays organ with us. And he will he'll fill in for our accompanist when she can't be there. And you know, he's really a great guy. You got to know David. He's really a great guy. He really is. And he made this group. When he retired, we did a search for a new director, and we did find someone. And then that person went off and did something else, and we brought another director on. Then that person moved to California, and that's kind of how we wound up. And I shouldn't, that's not a good way to say it, but that's how Beth became our artistic director. She was associate artistic director until that time. And, you know, we have to vote, the group has to vote on any new director, any new artistic director. And that's how Beth became our artistic director.
And that year that I did the fall concert of 2017, then David Vojeding did the Christmas concert that year while we were voting and taking care of those procedural pieces. The other cool thing that happened during the pandemic was we actually got together to celebrate David Vojeding's 50th anniversary to his wife, Carlene. And so we met at an outdoor park on their way to their anniversary dinner. They were going to dinner with two choir members. And so they drove them to where we were waiting to serenade them for their anniversary. So that was a special thing that did happen where we hadn't been together, and then we wore masks and sang outside for them. So it was a special event last year.
Well, that's very sweet. Was that a surprise to Mr. Vojeding?
It was a surprise to them, yes.
That's very sweet. I'm sure he was most appreciative.
He loved it, and Carlene just beamed.
Well, how many members are there presently in the Atlantic Chamber Singers?
So we have about 45 people that have auditioned and been accepted, but in any individual concert, it's usually more like 38. This year, of course, is very different, as many didn't want to wear masks as we were beginning to rehearse, and which we totally understood, or just weren't comfortable singing yet together. So we've been working with about 28 this season, this Christmas, and then we're hoping in the spring to get back to our closer to 40 number.
And is it a 50-50 split between men and women?
Actually, right now it is. That's not generally the way it works in choirs. A lot of times we have way more women than men. And I would say even in Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, we generally, Tony, would you say maybe 60-40 women to men usually? But right now we're right at 50-50.
Yeah, about 60-40 makes sense. But
generally, yes.
Well, it's extraordinary that we had so many men audition, and each of them was really quite good.
Yes, so we actually did auditions back in August, planning to sing for October, but we did have to cancel that event. But we did pick up three new men, and so that really filled in some ranks, some holes that we had. So we were excited about that, and we're pretty evenly balanced at this moment, which is awesome news.
Okay, well, let me pause for a moment now and remind our listeners that they are listening to Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large.
My name is Francis DeMuro, and I'm the host of this morning's program.
And my name is Christopher DeMuro, and I'm the co-host and producer of today's program.
And today our guests are Beth Green, the artistic director of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, and Tony Spadafora, the vice president of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. And before the station identification, we were talking about the present makeup of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. It's about a 50-50 split between men and women. And Ms. Green, you indicated that you held auditions, I think you said, in August.
Yes.
How often? So obviously there's an audition process. If any of our listeners were are interested in joining the group, they would go through an audition process. But how often are auditions held?
So generally, I offer auditions at the beginning of each season, meaning at August and at January of each calendar year. So I offer them twice a year, and Tony receives those audition requests through our website. So IndieAtlanticChamberSingers.org is where someone would go if they wanted to schedule an audition, and the email actually goes to info@IndieAtlanticChamberSingers.org, and Tony monitors that email address. We also have a phone number associated with our group, and so he takes all that information, and then if we have anyone scheduled to audition, then we offer auditions and open that up, and usually we'll advertise on Facebook and say that we're accepting auditions at that point. So generally at the beginning of January and the beginning of August, right before we begin for that season, is when we start.
Where are the auditions held?
We audition at Eastminster Presbyterian Church, which is where we rehearse. So we generally are in their choir room on the second floor, but we did decide for this concert to be practicing in the sanctuary always, so we could just have a little more space to spread out as we're singing together.
And if someone auditions and suppose they don't make the cut, so to speak, are they able to audition again and try again
at
a later
date?
Absolutely.
We really encourage people to continue to work on their vocal skills and come back. Often, Tony receives these emails from me. I try to explain why we had to say no to someone, and then he's able to send something like, if you'd like to audition again, we would love to hear you again. This time, maybe work a little more on your vowel blending or work more on singing with some other groups before you would try again. Because there are plenty of beautiful non-auditioned choruses around that can really help people build up their skills to be able to be ready for a group like this. We move very quickly through our music, and we expect a lot of work to be done outside of the rehearsal. And so people that are able to do that have generally had a lot of experience with choirs. Sight reading is another thing that comes up a lot. We have not much time for rehearsal note by note teaching, which is what generally would happen in a rehearsal. But we don't do that very much in our group because we need to be working on our group sound and our group blend and lots of other, you know, deeper levels of it besides just rote singing and teaching the notes. And so we just need to spend more time on the artistic part of it. And so we do expect a lot of our singers, which is why it's a small audition group.
Well, in my experience, a lot of people think that they sing a whole lot better than they really do. Do you run into that during the audition process?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. But yes, as the audition process goes, you sort of get that vibe that they're really confident, and confidence is a wonderful thing, but it can be a real trap in choral singing, because if you're singing louder than everyone else because you assume that you're better than everyone else, then it tends to not work in the group setting. So I definitely take that into consideration as we're deciding who should be a part of us.
Yeah, I'll just add that our group's not the only one where that happens.
Right.
Well, that's just been my experience through life. A lot of us think that we sound a lot better than we really do.
So. sure. We definitely hear it a little different in our heads than other people perceive us, for sure.
Right.
And in fact, Francis, what we do is we will record certain rehearsals, and we'll let the singers hear that, and sometimes you have to be not faint of heart.
I see. Well, how many?
And Tony's being modest. He brings all the recording equipment and takes care of that. And I so appreciate being able to listen back, because when I'm conducting and teaching and trying to work on the music, then I can't focus as much on what I'm hearing at any individual moment or following just what are the tenors doing, just what are the altos doing. And so I'm able to listen back multiple times and then sense, oh, this is the spot that's the problem. It's the tenors are missing this one note and it's throwing off the chord, but I wouldn't know that if I'm trying to hear everything as one. So it's been really helpful to be able to go back, because rehearsals, they fly by. I mean, the time together and working so hard on the music, but being able to revisit what happened and remembering it exactly as it happened instead of my perception of what happened has been really helpful.
How frequently does the group practice?
We practice every week on Monday nights. In the past, we've practiced for 2.5 hours at a time. But when we began in October, we started at just 1 hour and then gradually worked up to 2. But we are not going past 2 hours right now.
And you mentioned earlier that there was a period of time where the singers may have had to sing in masks. Is that right?
Oh, yes, definitely. We were worried about our safety. Yes.
Well, how did that work? How could you? Didn't that affect the sound?
Yes, but actually last Christmas, we performed in downtown Melbourne during the shopping hours on Saturday evenings, and we had matching masks that we wore all the time. And it's very hard to sing with a mask. It's overheating, but the sound is not bad. It really doesn't affect it quite as much as you might think it would. And also there are special singer masks that take the fabric away from your face. And so at least you're not breathing in the fabric, as in it's not physically going into your mouth. And so it's difficult, it's challenging, and we still wear masks from time to time, but we try to just spread out as much as we can and be able to sing together as most of us are vaccinated. So
the masks, even now, you're using masks in practice?
Yes.
How many performances does the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, how many performances do they put on during the course of a season?
So this Christmas, we actually have 6 events that we're doing. 3 of those are the caroling events downtown Melbourne on Saturday evenings on November 27th and December 11th and December 18th. So we'll be out from 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock strolling in downtown Melbourne in our beautiful Indie Atlantic Chamber Singer black capes. We look very, we look like, what would you call it, Tony? The singers.
Oh, we look
from,
like English carolers.
Yes, like English carolers, exactly. And so we stroll downtown and they go by in the horse and carriage and we serenade the riders. It's great fun.
Are there top hats?
Tony sometimes wears one, don't you? We have a couple ringers.
Yeah. I don't like wearing a hat, but yeah.
Wear hats. It's pretty fun.
There's some people that wear reindeer things.
And then the other general things that we have each Christmas, we like to perform with the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra on the Messiah Sing-Along. And this year that will be on Saturday, December 4th at 3 p.m. at Eastminster Presbyterian Church. And so people can secure free tickets at spacecoastsymphony.org for that event. And so we'll be the choir kind of featured, but everyone is welcome to come in, borrow a music score, and sing from the regular seating in the congregation. And so we really invite everyone in the community to come out and either listen or sing along with that special event. And then we usually have 2 Christmas concerts, like official Just Us, hour-long Christmas spectaculars. And so we'll have those on December 5th. At Riverside Presbyterian Church in Cocoa Beach at 3:30 p.m., and tickets are available on their website. And then at Eastminster Presbyterian Church on Sunday, December 12th at 3 p.m. And for that one, tickets are not required. You can just show up on December 12th and hear some great holiday carols and beautiful Christmas music.
Okay, well, let me pause for a moment now and remind our listeners that they're listening to Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large.
My name is Francis DeMuro, and I'm the host of this morning's program.
And my name is Christopher DeMuro, and I'm the co-host and producer of today's program.
And today we are very pleased to have with us as our guests Beth Green, the artistic director of the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers, and Tony Spadafore, the vice president of the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers. Are the Indy Atlantic Chamber Singers, are you an incorporated group?
Yes, we are actually. We're a 501c3 organization.
So a nonprofit and, organization.
Nonprofit, yes, sir. So donations always appreciated.
Miss Green earlier in the program talked about tickets. I mean, obviously there are expenses involved in running the organization. How do you pay for those expenses?
Well, so the tickets are always free, but they're just for kind of reservations. Tony, I'll let you take the second part of that question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, actually, we have since the outset, the inception of the group, advertised ourselves as performing free concerts, with the caveat that a free will collection is taken up at the concert itself. So that's the main source of our revenue. We do get donations from time to time. They've fallen off with this pandemic situation we've been in, but that's pretty much it.
So the members themselves, the singers, there's not a membership fee for them to be a part of the organization.
No, there is no dues, no membership fee. We may charge them for music when we have to buy some new stuff, but generally we use music that's in our library, which is quite extensive because we've been around now for so long. So, and or we can borrow music from other groups, which, by the way, have been very, you know, we do the same thing. We'll lend music to other groups. They'll lend music to us. We can normally borrow music from either, you know, some of the church's libraries. So it's a really cool artistic community here in Brevard, I have to tell you.
Well, that certainly has been our experience, that there's a vibrant music and arts community within Brevard County.
There is. And I'm at First United Methodist of Melbourne, as I said, and so I'm able to use our library when we can share across. And Eastminster Presbyterian Church is currently directed by our accompanist, Teresa Fleener. And so she's always willing to let us borrow things to put together our performances. In fact, I spent many hours with her looking through the Christmas options that they have. They have so much music there at Eastminster, a really rich music history. And then at Our Lady of Grace Catholic Community, James Sorrell is our associate artistic director. And so he's been really helpful as well. And so in some cases, we'll be borrowing from him in the future as well. So even just three churches really have a lot of music in our libraries collectively.
For the formal performances, Ms. Green, are you the one who selects the music that the group will perform?
Yes, I do. But I do present that to my accompanist and associate director. And we sort of talk through, you know, I usually choose too many, and then I have them help me weed out, well, this one's not a great choice because, and we talk about the reasons for that, or we'd really love to do it, but it's probably not the right time when we've been off for 2 years to try to do something that challenging. And so we kind of decide based on the difficulty of the music, how it fits with the other pieces I've selected, and they just are a great sounding board for me. In addition, sometimes the board, when I send my titles, will respond with maybe an idea of a different piece that maybe we should add to the program. So there's a little bit of give and take, but I would say that I probably do 90% of it. Would you agree, Tony?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know Beth is also very open to suggestions. But, you know, of course, Beth is the artistic director, and Beth has the final word. So, you know, someone makes a suggestion. I know Beth takes it under consideration if it makes sense for the theme and for the message she's trying to get across with the concert, then she'll use it. If not, save it for another time or maybe never do it.
Well, is there a sort of signature piece of music that the organization is known for that people expect when they go to, for instance, the Christmas concert?
Sure. Well, in the past, we have had one that's not associated with Christmas, but used to end our concerts surrounding the choir, called The Road Home, surrounding the congregation, or the audience, I should say. But at Christmas, we'll often do a John Rutter piece, and this year we're doing Candlelight Carol, which I think people may not know the title, but they may recognize that piece when we perform it for them.
And I'm going to ask each of you, let's start with Mr. Spadafora. Do you have a favorite piece of music that the group has performed?
Oh, I don't know, Francis. There are so many nice pieces we've done. Christmas is my favorite time of year, and some of the stuff we're doing this year is really marvelous. You know, we're doing this one piece, which was, you know, a little bit older piece called Omnium Mysterium, and it's polyphonic. It just fills the room. It is really a wonderful, one of my favorites, actually. I really like that particular piece. And of course, you know, the Road Home is what Beth was referring to earlier, where we'll surround the audience and sing to them. They absolutely love that. The choir loves it. We've done it so many times now, we can do it, you know, from rote memory. It's a beautiful piece. It really is.
How about you, Miss Green?
Yeah, there's not a one moment. It happens in concerts, or actually it happens even more often in rehearsal, where you'll just have a moment of sighing from the beauty kind of at the end of a piece. And it happens often, which is amazing. And so I couldn't pick a favorite. I just couldn't. But I'm really loving some pieces that we're doing, like We Three Kings, and we're doing a beautiful version of Ding Dong Merrily on High that's a cappella this time that I just really love. So we tried to pick pieces that are pretty familiar in most cases. The Omnium Mysterium is less familiar, but it's our only piece that's in Latin this time. And we just really wanted to showcase our group and also choose some things that are mostly familiar with a twist. So we have a great version of Hark of Carol. I'm sorry, I'm going to say it wrong. There are several. Oh, it's Angels We Have Heard on High that has this Gloria pattern in the background, a rhythmic section by our men. And then the ladies sing the regular tune on top of that. So everyone in the audience is feeling that familiar carol, and yet you couldn't sing along with it because there's this backbeat kind of thing going on. So just special different arrangements of pieces that people already know in general was my inspiration for this particular concert, because I think we all are looking for something that's familiar after this past year and a half of craziness.
Well, Miss Green, as the artistic director, are you still able to perform yourself with the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers?
Sadly, I am not singing when I'm conducting. It's bad practice, but since we have our associate conductor, I am able sometimes when he's conducting a piece to sneak in and sing a little bit. And also at our three caroling events, when there are not enough sopranos, I happily don't wave my arms and just move to the side of the group and sort of direct with my head as we sing together. So I'm excited to be able to sing that way. And I certainly, as Tony said, stop the group and demonstrate vocally what I'm asking for, which I think is really helpful. Instead of just describing what sound I'm looking for, I will always demonstrate for the group singing for them to show them what I'm asking for, and especially with the sopranos, to be able to show what certain notes I'm looking for or what color on those pitches I'm seeking. So I'm able to sing, but not as much as the singers in the group.
Well, you know, I have to just add in here, one of the big reasons and one of the qualifications I've always looked for in a music director or an artistic director is someone who is a singer. I've performed with other conductors, and they are, you know, in one case it was conductor of a symphony orchestra. And it is very difficult. I mean, these are brilliant people. They make wonderful music, but it's also very difficult for them to articulate exactly what they want. Where when you have a singer, the singer can actually, as an artistic director, can actually show you what exactly sing for you the way it should be and the way, you know, that the artistic director would like to have it. So that's very valuable to us, I think.
So, Ms. Green, do you miss not being able to sing as much as you did when you first joined the group?
A bit, but I actually sing with other groups, and so I'm able to get both sides of it, which is actually really helpful to show up at a rehearsal and sing and then kind of listen to what those directors say and watch their gesture and get some ideas for what to try with my group as well. So I'm always learning new techniques and what works and also what doesn't, what might be might help me to take a fuller breath and what kind of makes me stressed out and taking shallow breaths. So I'm able to try to incorporate that into my gesture as well.
Okay, well, let me pause for a moment now and remind our listeners that they are listening to Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large.
My name is Francis DeMuro, and I'm the host of this morning's program.
And my name is Christopher DeMuro, and I'm the co-host and producer of today's program.
And today our guests are Beth Green, the artistic director of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, and Tony Spadafora, a singer and vice president of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. And before the earlier in the program, we were talking about the audition process. I'm just curious. Suppose someone auditions and is accepted into the group. Does that mean that they are? Do they have to audition again, or for the next? Do they become a member of the group and no longer have to audition for a spot?
That's correct. Once they have auditioned for me, they are a member of the group. But I'm sure there will be occasions where people that have been a great member of the group in the past, I mean, eventually sometimes are ready to retire. And so I have not had this happen yet, thank goodness. But eventually that may be an issue of coming in versus going out. Because as you said, we've already accepted 45, 50 singers. And so as that number gets higher and some people don't perform different years, it becomes a numbers issue where we have too many or too few, and we sort of have to figure those pieces out. So that's a difficulty.
And I assume that there may be times when someone's been in the group for a long time, but as we get older, maybe our skills or our sound diminishes.
And generally those people do just retire from the group and thank us for, you know, being their family with them and say, we're going to be in the audience now. And they make that transition on their own. Tony, would you agree?
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. I've seen, not in this group, but I've seen in other groups, even at church scenarios where people just hang on and hang on and hang on, and it becomes so obvious, and it's painful to listen to. But we haven't had that in our, thank heavens, in our group. And Beth, you're welcome to tell me if I ever need to do that. Please do. But I'm sure my wife will tell me before that.
but it probably is hard for some people to. Just acknowledge that, I'm just not as good as I used to be.
It is, but as I said, it's a difficult group to be in, and so I think you start to notice if you aren't able to catch up and stay moving as quickly through the music as the group is, and so I think it becomes more obvious with our group potentially than with others, because with a smaller group, it's more obvious when there are holes or when there are wrong notes and that type of thing, and so I think because they've been such good musicians to get into the group in the first place, that they notice when they aren't carrying their weight. And so a lot of them will just say, I need a break, or I'm finished. And so they pull back.
What is the age range of the present composition of the Indie Atlantic
Chamber? I'm not sure how young our youngest is, but I believe he is in early 20s. We just accepted a bass who I believe is maybe... would you say maybe 20, early, mid-20s, Tony? I'm not sure how old he is.
Yeah, I'd say early to mid-20s, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then how old would you say is our oldest? Is he mid-70s?
Mid-70s.
Okay.
That's quite the range.
It is. And they're in the same section, too.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Right.
Now, Ms. Green, you mentioned the Christmas-type performances. After the new year, are there performances that are planned by the group for after the new year?
Yes, we are planning to perform our British Invasion concert, which involves music from the Beatles, music from Queen, and also music from royal weddings. And so we're really excited to present that program, and it will likely be at the end of March, but we'll be releasing details on our website, IndieAtlanticChamberSingers.org.
Well, that sounds very interesting, although it sounds like an odd sort of combination.
Yes, I definitely like to try to bring in things that audiences expect and then things they don't expect. And then I'd love to have an audience that appreciates the classical nature of what we often do and also appreciates the other music from that same country. And so different pieces of music by bands versus choral literature. And so we'll be hiring some guest instrumentalists to help us make those pieces be true to what they are as well.
And that sounds like the British Invasion performance sounds like it would be very interesting, although I'm just having a hard time conceiving how a choral group could...
A little hard to wrap your mind around, but I have to tell you, it's very fun music, and I know the group's going to enjoy working on it.
And so that will be your big performance in the spring?
Yes. Sometimes we do like a performance in March and then another one in May. This year, I think we're going to stick with the end of March, beginning of April, and have that end our season potentially. So, but keep an eye on our website. There's always different events that come up. Sometimes outside groups will hire us to do events. We've sung for weddings. We've sung for special events. And so sometimes other things will pop up, but that's what we have planned for this year.
And once again, for our listeners, what is the website?
IndieAtlanticChamberSingers.org.
Is that the best place for our listeners to get information concerning the group, concerning auditions, concerning performances, that sort of thing?
It is. We do have a Facebook page as well, and that's just Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, three words.
And that information may be on that Facebook page as well?
Yes, and they can send questions in through that Facebook page, or they can send questions through the email address that's on the website.
Well, what else would you like our listeners to know about the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers? Let's start with Mr. Spatafora.
Well, I would like them to know that they are welcome to come to our performances this year. They're welcome to come see us downtown, and they're particularly welcome to come to the Messiah Sing-Along along with the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra, whom we've partnered with many years doing that, interesting, and also with other events with the SCSO. That would be good, and I'd like them really stay tuned and be looking at our website to find out what we have planned for this whole British invasion and potentially other things this year, this and next year.
Ms. Green?
Yes, I'd love for them to come and meet us. In the caroling that we do downtown, we tend to take smaller groups, and we'd love for people to follow us around downtown and sing along with those carols. And it's not just us performing for them, but it's us caroling together. And so we'd love to have kids stop by and sing pieces with us and as we walk around and just bring some holiday joy and festivity, because we could all use that right about now.
Well, in the performances that are planned for indoor spaces, I'm sorry for asking the question, but I think it's probably a question that our listeners might want to know. Will the listening audience be required to wear masks?
Sure. At Riverside, masks are requested. And at Eastminster, I believe it's more about spacing out people where they're sitting. Tony, do you remember the answer on that one?
I do believe you're right, Beth, but I'm not certain about that, spacing out. You know, many venues today have, you know, masks requested, but not required. And I know that's true at least at some of the venues I've been to, my particular church, a lot of other churches. Down at Eastminster, I do believe distancing is actually required.
And so that distancing, will that affect the amount of the number of people that can attend the performances?
Yeah, very likely.
I mean, it'll limit that number. You might not be able to have as full a house as you have had in the past.
And Christmas has usually been full to the gills.
Right. Christopher and I have been to several of your performances at Christmas, and they're always wonderful. There's always very large crowds. So I guess it would be important for people, if they're planning on going, to make sure that they get their reservations well in advance.
So for those who'd like to attend our concert at Riverside Presbyterian Church on December 5th at 3:30 p.m., you should go to riversidepres.org and reserve your tickets today. And then for the concert at Eastminster on December 12th at 3 p.m., you can just show up for the concert. The concert begins at 3 p.m., but I'd advise getting there at 2:15 when our doors open to our guests if you'd like to get a good seat.
Well, we only have a few moments left in the in this morning's program, and I would just like to take this opportunity to ask Mr. Spadafora and Ms. Green if there's anything else they'd like our listeners to know about the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. Having seen the group, I can personally say that they produce beautiful music, and it sounds from what we've heard this morning that it's a wonderful group to be a part of. It has a family-type feeling to it. Would either of you like to speak to those issues?
Go ahead, Beth.
Absolutely. We definitely feel like a family group together. We work together. We go out to dinner together after concerts at times. As I said earlier, some of them take other couples out for anniversary dinners among the group. We have members of the group that are married to each other. We just have a great time together, a wonderful time rehearsing, which we need to because we rehearse so much together, and then performances are just a small piece of it. And so the audience just gets to see the final product. But we've gone through the blood, sweat, and tears, as you say, and lots of work on their own as well as with the group. And so we're just really proud of what we've created, and we'd love for as many people to see it as possible. So we hope that everyone will consider coming out to a concert and enjoying some Christmas music. We'll have two pieces that the audience can sing along with, familiar carols, and we hope that everyone will do that.
Mr. Spadafora?
I hate to say me too, but me too. Come on out and listen to us. Come down, carol with us, and by all means, come and sing along with the Messiah Sing-Along at Eastminster Presbyterian. It'll be a lot of fun.
And hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we're going to really get back to being what's normal and not having to wear masks and not having and being able to just enjoy music, live music again.
That's the plan.
Thank you both Ms. Green, Beth Green, the Artistic Director of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, and Tony Spadafora, the Vice President of the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers, for being our guests once again on the program. That about wraps it up for this week's edition of Radio 1300's weekly community affairs program, Brevard at Large. Again, thank you both for being our guests, and we encourage all of our listeners to check out the website, which to find out... Again, if one of you could tell us the website one more time.
IndieAtlanticChamberSingers.org. And we thank you so much for having us on the program today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you both for being our guests. And we certainly encourage our listeners to go see the Indie Atlantic Chamber Singers. You will not be disappointed. Thank you both, and thank you all for listening.